Welcome to our next session on dispensational history. And today we're going to be looking at a man, a Bible, and a school. So we're going to start off with C.I. Schofield, a man who was greatly used of the Lord in promoting dispensational theology in America and around the world as well. And Schofield was born near Clinton, Michigan in 1843, and he served in the Confederate Army during the Civil War. And in 1869, he moved to Kansas and went to law school, and there was accepted onto the Kansas Bar Association. And later he served in the state legislature from 1871 to 1874, and then was appointed by President Grant, and he became the U.S. Attorney General for Kansas. And so here was a man that came from a meager background and was involved in the life of a lawyer and involved with politicians as well. And in that atmosphere, even though he was brought up in a home of sincere believers, in that atmosphere, his life began to deteriorate. And he took on a very serious alcohol problem. And in 1879, he left his wife and his two daughters. And there were a number of articles written about this, mostly by his detractors, and they make a big deal of these facts. And it is true that happened in 1879. His life seemed to hit rock bottom. He sinned, no question about it. But also in 1879, he met up with a man named Mr. McFeeters, and this man led Schofield to Christ. And that changed everything, as it does when somebody gets saved. So his critics like to bring up these past moral failures in his life, but they fail to forget the fact that he later got saved. And God forgave Schofield's sins in the past, and God remembers them no more, but evidently his modern-day critics don't share God's view of redemption and seem to like to bring up all these evil sins of his past and hold him accountable for it, which is really not fair. It's amazing how many critics there are of dispensationalists and also of dispensationalism, the system of theology. But be it as it may, it's not fair, but that's what dispensationalists are contending with today. There's an awful lot of bad press, so to speak, about dispensational theology. And some of the critiques that you're going to find online are kind of over the top. I just looked at today, I looked up history of dispensationalism and Schofield, and found a couple of articles that were incredibly over the top. One, the title was Satanic Influence in the Schofield Bible. And he said, the real influence behind the publication of the Schofield Bible were two men who were either influenced by or possessed by demons. Their motivation was not to glorify God, but to bring about a new world order with a new world religion based on spiritualism. Now, where he ever got that, apart from a wicked imagination, I couldn't tell you. Another man wrote about the Schofield Bible. He said it was written in 1909 by a then-convicted felon, Schofield, financed by Jewish hackers with bribes, and the Bible was forced into Bible colleges and pulpits and for the subjugation of the Christian religion into Zionism. So people are getting little tidbits of information and creating their whole new story about this, and it's a little disturbing to me. There is so much trash online, everybody knows that, no kidding, but especially when it comes to dispensationalism, it seems. It's really getting a bad rap today, and that's why I'm trying to present it in a side that perhaps many young people have never seen before. Maybe that's the critics of all that they know about it. So I'm trying to present it in a favorable light, not by a critic, but by one who embraces dispensational theology. So going on in the life of C.I. Scofield, later in the 1880s, in St. Louis, he met up with James Brooks, and this pastor, a leader in dispensationalism in that time, discipled Scofield and taught him dispensational truth. So that was one influence in Scofield's life, and that was in a Presbyterian church where they were teaching dispensational theology. Another man who was greatly used of the Lord to influence Scofield was Hudson Taylor, the missionary to China. And he spoke at conferences where Scofield was attending, and they became friends. And Hudson Taylor sparked a great interest in Scofield in missions. And that kind of prompted Scofield to form the Central American Mission. And that was called CAM, the abbreviation, I guess, is the word I'm trying to think of. Let's go on. And in 1888, Scofield published an immensely popular book called Rightly Dividing the Word of Truth. Just a little booklet, not a lot to it, but it was a real eye-opener to many people. He presented some contrasts in the Bible, like law and grace, the two natures of the believer, the two comings of Christ, and he made it simple and clear so that anybody could understand. It was greatly used of the Lord. In 1895, D.L. Moody convinced him to move to Northfield, Massachusetts, and there he became the pastor of the Congregational Church that Moody had been attending, but he also assisted in managing the Northfield Bible Conference started by Moody there. Scofield also attended the Niagara Bible Conferences, and then when there were some doctrinal disputes that arose at that conference, Scofield and Gabelline met together at the Seacliff Conference, Bible Conference, and they planned to write, they discussed this, and they decided to write an annotated Bible. In other words, a Bible with notes from a dispensational perspective. And these notes for the first edition were drawn up and edited at Scofield's summer home in the mountain region or hill region of New Hampshire. And he formed a board of some biblical scholars, and they worked together. This was back in 1909, and they put a lot of labor into putting together some notes for this, what is later referred to as the Scofield Reference Bible. And this Bible, this Reference Bible, with all these notes from a dispensational perspective, were probably the greatest influence in spreading dispensationalism across the United States. The Lord used it greatly. Now, the movement was already up and running. It was spreading across the country, but the Scofield Reference Bible definitely made it a more popular movement and more widespread. Later, after his Bible was put out, he returned to Texas, and there he pastored a Presbyterian church, which was teaching, when he got there at least, dispensational theology. You don't see that today, but that was the case then, when many of the mainline denominations were just turning away from liberalism, and dispensationalism was meeting the need of hungry believers in that day. And so Scofield spent some time there, and he mentored a young man named Lewis Sperry Chafer, who later took over the pulpit in that church. And in 1914, Scofield, along with William Pettengill and Lewis Sperry Chafer, decided they were interested in forming a Bible college on the East Coast, and they founded what we know as the Philadelphia School of the Bible, and that also promoted dispensational theology. In addition, Scofield put together some notes that was kind of like the first online course before there were online courses. These were correspondence courses, and he sent them out to about 10,000 pastoral and other ministry students and was teaching them to interpret the Bible using the literal grammatical method of Bible interpretation from a dispensational perspective. And that also helped promote dispensationalism and spread it around the world because many of these men and women became missionaries. So we've considered a man and his book, the C.I. Scofield and the Scofield Reference Bible. And I'd like to just say a few things about something else the Lord used in the 1900s, way back in the 1900s, the early 1900s it began, Dallas Theological Seminary. And so in the early 1900s, there were already about 55 Bible institutes around that time that were being formed across the country. And after World War I, many more dispensational schools were and colleges were now being formed. And one of them was in Dallas, founded by Lewis Sperry Chafer in 1924. And originally, it was called the Evangelical Theological College. And there, dispensationalism was promoted again by Chafer, but it was now in a formal academic setting. It wasn't just a Bible Institute and or messages in a series at a church here or there, but now it was in a formal academic setting. And the Lord used Lewis Sperry Chafer in the early days of Dallas Seminary as the founder and teacher there. And so Chafer wrote an 8-volume series on dispensationalism. It's systematic theology. If you don't have it, I would highly recommend that you get it for your library. And there he systematized Darby in those early days in the mid-1800s. Darby was prolific in his writings about the Bible from a dispensational perspective, but it was Chafer who systemized dispensationalism in a broader way. And this was taught at Dallas Seminary. There were many well-known dispensationalists there in those early days. There was A.T. Pearson, Harry Ironside, J. Vernon McGee, Merrill Unger, Charles Feinberg, Lewis Johnson, John Walvoord, Charles Ryrie, Dwight Pentecost, and many others. And so that was a very influential school in the early 1900s, and it's still there today. And other Bible seminaries arose in those days. We mentioned the Philadelphia School of the Bible, or Philadelphia College of the Bible, and also Grace Theological Seminary in Winona Lake, Indiana. That was founded in 1937 by Alva J. McLean. And there were many well-known, in those days, many well-known dispensational leaders and pastors and authors. And I'll share a few of those men, not because I agree with all of their positions, but just to show you how widespread and mainstream dispensationalism was in those days, for the 150 years or so, up until the relative, almost up to the present. Dispensationalism has fallen on hard times now, and it seems to be rejected more and more from pulpits and schools and seminaries, but these are the end times, and I guess we should expect no less. But for example, there was a broad spectrum of churches and organizations and just different groups of believers that were dispensational in their core teachings. We mentioned earlier A.J. Gordon from a Baptist from a Baptist background, and W.E. Vine from a Brethren background, and Arno Gabelin, he was a Methodist, a fundamental Methodist, and A.C. Dixon, another Baptist fundamentalist, and then you had other writers like Dave Hunt today. He was a Brethren author. And then we have others that were non-denominational, and there were some well-known men like Hudson Taylor and Jim Elliot, missionaries, Plymouth Brethren, John Whitcomb, a great creationist with the Lord now. He was a Grace Brethren, and Harry Ironside also were Brethren. So there were Brethren, Baptists, Methodists, even some Presbyterians, a wide swath of churches that had been teaching dispensationalism. And W.A. Criswell, he was in the Southern Baptist. And in fact, during the 1950s and 1960s, most conservative Southern Baptists were dispensational in their approach to the scripture. It's not the case today. Today, more and more, the Southern Baptists are rejecting dispensational theology. In fact, one of their most popular seminaries today, the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, outright rejects it in favor of Reformed theology, and the president, Albert Mohler Jr., is a staunch Calvinist, staunch Reformed theologian, and he's friends with men like John MacArthur, who had been dispensational, but he actually calls himself, this is not a pejorative I made up, he calls himself a leaky dispensationalist. In other words, he was, and it's kind of leaking away from him, and that's happening a lot lately. In recent years, Dallas and other schools have been, I don't know what their motivation was, but they've been trying to bridge the gap between Reformed theology and dispensationalism. And by building that bridge, they discovered that it became a one-way street, not a two-way street. And what's happened is many, many men from a dispensational position are taking that one-way street and heading closer and closer to Reformed theology with progressive dispensationalism and MacArthur's version of dispensationalism. And so dispensationalism has fallen on hard times. And the Reformed writers are killing us when it comes to schools and writing books and conferences. And my hope and prayer is that some believers, some young people will come across, happenstance to fall across this video, and we'll see that there's another side to the story. And that not everything that you read about dispensationalists is accurate and is coming from men who usually have an axe to grind. And so I'm hoping that even though dispensationalism isn't as widespread as it once was, it was mainstream, it was the predominant view in the evangelical world for over a century, but very recently Reformed folks seem to be taking over. But we do know that truth never changes, and we would encourage you to approach the Bible from a literal perspective. Just take God's word at face value. And if you interpret the Bible literally, using the literal, grammatical, historical method of Bible interpretation, you will be a dispensationalist. Take God, take his word at face value.